Ag, Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Committee will come to order. We have a quorum. And Representative Cornish moves that the minutes of April 19th be approved. Are there any additions or corrections? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Members, we have the Ag Omnibus Bill, and it's House File of 1420 that is before us. So I'll move House File 1420. I also will move the amendment AO50613, and that will be the Delete Everything Amendment to House File 1420. So we will work off of amending House File or the Amendment 0613. And so that's what's before us. The are there any questions on the Amendment 0613? It was handed out yesterday and you had a chance to look at it. You need any clarifications on information that's in House File 0613 before we start amending it?
It's all the same, right? There's no changes between yesterday and today. Okay.
No, it's exactly what we handed out yesterday. But if there's any, after you've read it, if you wanted to get clarifications or anything, I wanted to cover that before we get into amendments. Representative Junk.
Well, I had a question for the department on a section of the bill. I don't know if you want to do that now or at the end.
We can start that right now. Because I'd like you to be comfortable with the first piece that's there, at least that you have good understanding of what's there, so we know if we need to amend it or not.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know who wants to answer it. It's a question on the Ag Marketing and Development on page 3, where the commissioner is possibly moving $135,000 over to a different section.
Where was that located?
Page 3, at the top of page 3. Commissioner may reduce appropriations for administration activities in this subdivision by up to $135,000 and transfer over to subdivision 5. I guess I want an explanation on what administrative activities they'd be reducing by $135,000 and what they'd be using that money for if they transferred it over to Division 5.
All right. Do we have someone from the department that can address that question?
And if not, we'll just remove that section.
And that's probably what we will do if they don't come up with an answer. But we'll let them work on that
all
for
right.
a while.
Yeah.
And see if
that's
they can
fine.
Get to us.
Okay.
Are there any other questions that we're going to need clarified for before we get to this bill? Okay. Let's see. I think what I'll do is go ahead and then have us vote on 0613 and have that put into the House file, and then we'll have amendments to the bill then after that. Any other questions on House File 0613 or the Amendment 0613? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Now, members, we have amendments to the bill. And who would like to start off? Rips and Junkie.
Mr. Chair, I have the A4 amendment. I think that's easy enough if you want to start with that.
A4. Okay. Representative Junkie moves the A4 amendment. Representative Junkie.
Members, what this is the rail container loadout study that we talked about in this committee as well as policy. At the time, we had verbiage in there to talk about a fairly thorough study, and the Ag Department interpreted that to mean even to the point of figuring how we would construct a facility. Rather than that, we narrowed it down to just, we want to know the economic impact of a rail container loadout facility in the west central Minnesota area, which again is a collaboration between the department, the marketing folks, and I'm bringing this forward on both of our behalfs. They indicate that this study can probably be done in-house, and we have not attached a dollar figure to it. So they're comfortable. If you want them to, they can come up and testify. But we have had discussions, and they're okay with this, and they'll do it in-house.
Okay. Is there anyone who wants to, the department or others, want to speak against House File or Amendment A4? Anyone want to speak in opposition of A4? Okay, any questions from members? Okay, the A4 amendments before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Next amendment.
0651.
5-1.
0651. Third at the bottom.
651. Okay, Representative Hackbarth moves the 0651 amendment. Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Representative Conan's bill that was before this committee. I believe it was House File 1620. I'm not sure of the exact number. In his bill, it has some fees. It creates a license for people to do this. It has to do with floating teeth and horses. I don't understand the whole issue myself, but this is some compromise language that they came up with over in the Senate. The Senate File 554, this is language very, very similar to that. Representative Conan agrees with this language. He's seen the language, and this is what he'd like to do. It doesn't have anything to do with fees or licenses or anything else.
Okay. Any questions from members? Anyone want to speak against the 0651 amendment? Okay, the amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion fails. Bill is amended. Next amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'll
allow tennis.
We have the 0A3 amendment.
A3.
And this,
Mr. Chair and members, this has to do with the apiary fees for beekeepers, and it's on page 15. And what it would do is change the fee structure so that it would be $10 per beekeeper, $25 for a hobbyist beekeeper, and $50 for a commercial beekeeper. And this has been worked out with the Department of Ag and the beekeepers, and the beekeepers are okay with it. It would, on our spreadsheet yesterday, I believe it was $58,000 over the biennium that it would have generated, and this would be $13,000.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, I wanted to ask Representative Pennis if, by changing this, obviously by changing this down to raising only $13,000 a year, or is it
per biennium?
Per biennium. Rather than 58, if it was your intention then to change the proposed appropriations that were currently $58,000 a year down to be $13,000 for the biennium also.
That would be my intentions. And I do have someone here that can testify if you need more explanation, in case I'm wrong.
You need corrective language in order to...
If the committee is, I don't think we need to cite the appropriations in the bill. If the motion is just understood by the committee to change the appropriation that appeared on the spreadsheet for apiary increased activity, which is currently at 58 down to 13, then the staff would at the end adjust the bill to reflect that. That would be okay. Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Pennis, was the $13,000 biennium or annual?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to get a firm commitment on that.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Geer Friso. I'm Section Manager for Plant Protection for the Department of Agriculture.
Just for clarification, what we had originally negotiated with the apiary, with the apiary advisory committee, was increased revenue of about $29,000. And our later meetings with the presidents of the commercial and the hobbyists, we came up with a compromise which generates about $13,000 of revenue into the general fund.
Per year.
Per year.
Per year. Okay, I was wrong.
Okay, so we're talking $26,000. So the spreadsheet should be changed from $58,000 to
$26,000? Yes, that's correct. Sure.
Okay. Right. Does everyone understand that? With this amendment, would also there would also be a change on the spreadsheet that would change the $58,000 to $26,000. Okay, any questions on that amendment from members? Is there anyone in the audience want to speak against the A3 amendment as altered? Okay. We have the A3 amendment before us, along with the change in the spreadsheet. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Representative Magnus, you have a fairly large amendment here. Why don't you...
Mr. Chairman, I would offer the A7 amendment. Basically, this amendment would be doing the ag policy, adding the ag policy language to House File 1420.
Representative Magnus will move the A7 amendment. And Representative Magnus, if you could kind of walk us through this, so you can, and if there are any hot buttons in here that you'd let us know what those are, so we're not stumbling into something without our being full knowledge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the A7 amendment, we've included several bills from members we heard in the Ag Policy Committee. The first section here we'll talk about, Section 5, unfortunately is not one that we heard in ag policy, but it's been heard in civil law to my knowledge, and also is following that route in the Senate. But we felt it was important to include this one. It's Representative David's language from House File 2039, and it deals with data collected by the Board of Animal Health and the identity of animals and premises. Mr. Chairman and members, this is a big biosecurity concern to a lot of people in rural Minnesota, so I would suggest we add that bill in there.
And Representative Magnus, you said that this passed the committee?
It's civil law, I believe, Mr.
Civil
Chairman.
Law. Okay. Representative Wiginius.
Yes, do you want questions on sections of this bill as we go through?
I think so. Yeah, I think we should kind of take them one at a time, because it's really a hodgepodge of issues, and they brought to us yesterday. So if they would like to, you know, this is the first time we've really had a chance to review some of these in this committee. So, Representative Wiginius.
Yes. I don't understand the problem, or we need to, at least I would like to understand the problem that this is trying to fix, and if it has any consequences beyond fixing the problem at hand.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, this is part of a federal initiative from the USDA for identification of animal ID. And the problems that we're trying to solve, members, is that when we have the case of, for example, a BSE cow or a mad cow and other disease outbreaks that really have a potential to be devastating to our livestock industry, in response to that, the USDA is initiating a federal program of animal identification.
But I don't understand from your explanation what the problem is that we are. I mean, you said that there might be mad cows out there. Okay, so there are mad cows out there. How does this address the problem of mad cows?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Magnus.
Representative Virginius. Again, this, the USDA is initiating the animal ID program. As part of that, they not only identify each animal, they identify the premises where the animals are kept as part of the USDA's animal ID program. In Representative David's bill, the state agencies that are required to administer the animal ID program, in this case Minnesota Department of Agriculture, to my knowledge, is able to go and certify that these are the premises where the animals are kept. We've had several counties contact us that they do not want this to be public because of the bioscience or biosecurity concerns. In other words, we don't want people traipsing around on livestock facilities because of the concerns we have for maintaining the disease control. We don't want folks going from one place that may have a disease and carrying it on to another.
Representative Magnus, I also suspect, coming out of the public safety background, that this is a concern with regard to people getting hold of information that may be only part of the information. And because of the impact that this kind of information could have if it's improperly used, I suspect we really need to have this managed well.
Exactly.
Because if it gets out there, some level of concern or whatever, it could set a whole area in panic, maybe even the state's economy from a livestock standpoint in panic, and it may be based upon misuse of information. So you really need somebody watching the gate on how it's used, is what I would suspect, and that's what they're trying to do. But we'll see if we can get some additional information. Representative John?
Mr. Chair, and to either the author of the amendment or to Mr. Rankin, just help us out, the subdivision that this is put into. This is the only bill in this whole section that we didn't see in ag policy. This in no way affects new applicants. It says your names and address of applicants, but this doesn't affect new applicants, does it, for new feedlots or feedlot expansion where we have to go through the public hearing process now and all of that? Because I think that maybe, I don't know where Representative Guinness is going, but to me that's one of the issues that may be problematic to people. If it's just simply maintaining all of our feedlot registrants as data privacy, current ones, I have no problem with that. But when someone's building new, we have this whole public process that we go through, and that doesn't affect that, or does it?
Rankin?
Mr. Chairman, and committee members, this is being, it's a new subdivision being placed into the Government Data Practices Act under the heading of agricultural data. There are already five subdivisions here, and this will be the sixth one. It's my understanding that it is related to the Board of Animal Health and only them, therefore does not deal with the permitting process.
Right. Is there further clarification by that? We have a testifier at the table. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is Dr. Chris Petrini. I'm a veterinarian with the Minnesota Board of Animal Health and an assistant director. And in answer, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in answer to your question, I think it's been addressed, but if I can answer any further questions, the National Animal Identification System is a federal program that each state will be taking on. And in order to effectively monitor that program, both the board and the Department of Agriculture are working together to move that program forward. And as has been stated, there's been a lot of concern among our producers that the information that we're going to collect, that we will be, it will be necessary in order to effectively control a major outbreak of disease. But in order to get this information, people are concerned that it would be misused. The information would be misused. And so right now, the information that comes to us because of the Data Practices Act is public information. So anything we collect, we would have to turn around and give to anyone who asks for it. What this amendment does is allows us to only use the information that, or collect the information that we need and not be, give it out to just anyone that would ask for it. So it allows some privacy for those people who are voluntarily registering with us.
Okay, Representative Wiginius.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand the security issue if there's mad cow disease and you're not going to say, you know, where that is happening. I get that. But it seems that this amendment is drawn far broader than just to protect that line of data. I mean, I understand the issue of protecting that line of data, but this says all of this data collected by the board is private. And I think maybe it's going overboard. It's answering more. It's doing more than was represented to us as the need. And I understand the need, and I buy the need. But this says the following data. So there may be no mad cow outbreak. There may be nothing. But we are saying all of this information is private. And that's.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think that one of the things that's different is that never before has everyone voluntarily registered with the board, and so there's never been a place where all the information on the producers has been gathered in one place. And I know that some of the concerns the producers have shared with us is that they don't want the information given out to people that might wish them harm or that might want to come onto their premises and invade their biosecurity or to do some kind of damage. And so the program would probably be more successfully run if that information could be kept so that we didn't have to give it out to just anyone who wanted it. Now, that doesn't mean that there are situations where that information would be necessary to be released, but primarily for disease control purposes. So I don't know if that answers your question, and I understand your concern, but this is what we're hearing from producers, is that it would be a more successful program if the information was kept. And I think that the federal government is also working on similar language that would then come down to states, and then states could rather decide whether they want to adopt it later. But they are encouraging each individual state to look at this issue, and it is a difficult issue.
Okay. Representative Jackie.
Just to clarify one more time, this section is drawn only to Board of Animal Health. Mm-hmm. So all the feedlot information that's contained by the Department of Agriculture is still public. Is that right? To Mr. Rankin or to the testifier as they understand it?
I'm sorry, I don't think I can answer that question.
I'll ask Mr. Rankin, our counsel, able counsel, one more time.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, it looks to me like it is drawn very narrowly to the information collected and maintained by the Board of Animal Health. It doesn't talk about the Agriculture Department or the PCA or anybody else.
And Mr. Chair, PCA and Department A and others, they're the collection point right now for the feedlot program. Is that not right?
For feedlot things.
And all that is still public information.
And Mr. Chairman, that should be the case.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
that
section is minimizing the energy usage. Representative Hamilton's bill, House File 560, talks about the governor's initiative to encourage renewable fuels, ethanol, biodiesel, and hydrogen from agriculture products into use by the state.
Mr. Chairman.
Another question.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish you hadn't had two in a row that I had to talk about, but the legislating findings on lines 21 and 22 that the increase of agricultural renewable fuels will help protect our environment is a very debatable issue. And I would say that given some of the testimony that the Ag Committee heard on atrazine, and how it's getting into our wells, and that we don't have the determination at this point to keep it out of our wells, which I think is the issue at hand, not whether atrazine is good or bad, but our determination to keep it out of water.
Representative Wiginius, is your objection going to be to these sections just on the findings?
Yes.
I'm wondering if usually findings are more political statements than they are anything else. I'm wondering if we couldn't accomplish the same thing just by deleting that section.
Fine. I'm willing to.
It'd be from line 18 on page 1 to line through line 6 on page 2. Does that cause harm to the intent of your bill to do that?
That's fine with me.
I haven't read it in detail as I went over it last night, but I didn't pick it up as anything other than just
unless you want, unless Mr. Chairman, you would care to just delete the language on line 21. Delete the word help, and in line 22, delete protect our environment. I guess on line 21, delete and help, and delete on 22, protect our environment. So the language would read, reduce Minnesota's dependence on imported oil while providing enormous benefit to Minnesota's rural economy. Rural means rural economy.
Representative Wagenius?
Mr. Chairman, I thought you were going to delete the whole of the legislative
That's fine. I don't care.
I think if Representative Hackbarth was here, he'd probably have that motion before us. He tries to get rid of those little statements wherever you find them. So.
Representative Chair, I tend to agree, too. The longer you're here, the more of these you see in statute. And I don't think it's the appropriate place is to put legislative findings or political statements into statute, into law. I think it's fine to make them and hold those beliefs, but our books are long enough the way it is, and they change from year to year. So what do? Go back and change these with the next administration or the next rural group that's here, or you know. So I tend to agree with the chair that I don't like to see that either, whether you agree with it or not.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, let's move in. We suggest we delete subdivision one and renumber the subdivisions, subsequent subdivisions.
Hey, Representative Magnus, we'll incorporate that into your amendment.
Thank you. In the next section, section 9 on page 3, line 32, is Representative Poppy's bill, House File 1747, that talks about agriculture best management practices. I believe Representative Poppy was here if we care to ask her anything about it. We did have significant discussion in our committee about that. In section,
Representative Poppy, anything we should know about?
Poppy.
Eugenia Poppy.
She's got a funny name.
Yeah. That's Poppy.
That's section 9 on the bottom of page 3. Yeah. Starts in the bottom of page 3.
Okay. That's loans, not best practices.
Okay. Right, loans. Then, Mr. Chairman, the next section I'll talk about is section 26. It's Representative McNamara's bill, House File 1937, dealing on plant pests, nursery stock, and wildflowers. It's quite a long section, Mr. Chair and members.
What page are we on?
That page is what through what?
That's page. Page 5, line 26 or 27, section 26, and that goes through page 13 to line 29, section 49.
And what does this section do?
This is a section, Representative McNamara's bill, that talks about plant pests, nursery stock, and wildflowers.
Is there anything controversial about
it? It's an initiative from the department also, Chairman.
Any questions from members on that?
No controversy in our committee that we had. Section 49 on the bottom of page 13, line 29, is Representative Pennis's bill. And that's the Organic Advisory Tax Task Force. Basically what her bill does, and Representative Venice can describe it also, is that it extends the time for the Organic Advisory Task Force.
I have on section 49 is a penalty provision.
Yes, there is a penalty provision, Mr. Chairman. On the bottom, on line 34, page 13, line 34, there's a penalty of that anyone that violates this provision is guilty of a gross misdemeanor. And I could have Representative Pennis explain that if she would.
Your penalty, Dennis.
Or is that to the bill before?
I think it's...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus. I think it is. It applies to the bill before, which is Representative McNamara.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Can Mr. Rankin or someone then describe what we're moving from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor penalty on for violating what? Or can the department come up and tell us? The sections like that get my roommate, Representative Rukavina, all excited when it gets to the House floor, so I want to make sure we've got the right explanation.
Could we have somebody explain the penalty on page 13? Section 49. It's at the bottom of the page. Please identify yourself for the record.
You are later here. You're in this section.
Mr. Chairman, Greg Bezicki from the Department of Agriculture. This bill is Representative McNamara's bill that has been passed through committee. And Representative Junkie, your question was? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Bezicki on the bottom of 13, we're deleting the misdemeanor penalty and increasing it to a gross misdemeanor, which is fairly substantial, not only for the penalty-wise, but the cost in the prison system and other things. Gross misdemeanor is fairly serious for a change in penalty as opposed to a misdemeanor, which can carry jail time too, but gross misdemeanor is a pretty big step up. What are you changing to a gross misdemeanor, and why?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, I hate to do this, but I'm wondering if Mr. Lamont from our enforcement and compliance section would be in a better situation to answer that question.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and take a shot at an answer.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Lamont, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Although I'm not familiar with this language in front of me, last year I worked extensively with the enforcement provisions which the legislature reviewed and enacted in regard to this chapter, which is, and maybe I could, if
Mr. Clark, do you know?
Is Sam Rankin available here? I'm looking at page 13 of the amendment, excuse me, and if I'm correct in interpreting this, on line 29, this is language that the Representative Junkie is inquiring about that would be added to section 31 of Minnesota statutes. Am I correct?
Correct. Section 31.032.
I regret that I am unfamiliar with that section of Minnesota statutes, and I wouldn't be able to make a comment.
I have the section in front of me. It's the regulatory laws relating to food, and it has to do with, for example, the dissemination of any false advertisement on food, deliberately mislabeling a product. And I guess my question is, again, you're going to a gross misdemeanor. I mean, a misdemeanor, I think, is fairly substantial already. And now, because I advertised or falsely labeled a food product, I'm going to a gross misdemeanor. And how many of those do you have a year? And what would the fiscal cost be to our court and our judiciary system if we're moving to the gross misdemeanor? Or did you not mean to do that? Maybe we should just delete that section.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, I unfortunately would rely right now on my colleague Kevin Elvering, who is in our food dairy inspection division. This is a enforcement provision that division administers. Generally, I would say that your comments are correct, that it is a elevation of penalty. It does take with it increased penalty and possible imprisonment time, and I would be speaking out of place to offer you a rationale for this proposal.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would incorporate into my amendment, we delete subdivision 1. until we figure out just what in the world we're doing here.
Okay, so section 49, lines 29 through 35 on page 13 are deleted from the bill. We'll incorporate that into the amendment, or from the amendment, A7 amendment. Okay, and we can always bring that back at a later time in another step if we get further explanation. I agree with Representative Junkie. I feel uncomfortable going forward.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, probably wasn't what I said. It was the rest of that section other than the food labeling. But again, it's still a substantial up, and we haven't seen a fiscal note on that, I don't think, down here in this committee where it's at today. So.
Yeah. Representative Wagenius.
I was hoping the department would still be up here because I have a question on page 10.
On what?
Page 10.
Page 10.
This is the inspections portion. And it says on line 9, all nursery stock growing at sites identified by nursery stock growers must be inspected. Then there's this large waiver. But my question is, what if there is a site that has not been identified and you feel that you ought to be inspecting because you suspect a pest? I mean, essentially, if a nursery stock grower, good grief, we shouldn't have words like that in statute, doesn't self-identify, then you've lost all your right to inspect, is the way I read it.
Bezicki?
Mr. Chairman, Greg Bezicki from the department. Representative Wagenius, Mr. Friso had another engagement, so I had to leave, but if I'm not mistaken in this is as specifications dealing with stock certification requirements, which would be taking place at a nursery. Under the provisions that were passed, the major rewrite that was passed, I believe, 2 years ago, we would have authority, if you're inquiring, would we be able to inspect any material, we have that authority. We have broad authority in that area. So this deals with the stock certification requirements. I'm quite sure that we have authority that's quite broad, and if you would like, I can have Mr. Friso or myself get back to you on that, but we do have that authority existing in statute currently.
Thank you.
Okay. That's a magazine.
The next section is Representative Penis's section. It starts, misspoke earlier, Mr. Chairman, it starts on line 36 of page 13. It's section 50, dealing with the Organic Advisory Task Force. Basically extends the time the task force is by 2 years that the task force is in place.
Okay.
The next section is page 16, line 14. Representative Blaine's bill, I believe, talking about the Board of Animal Health, its official laboratory. It's bill 318. Again, Mr. Chairman, on the next page, on line 17, there's a violation of a gross misdemeanor added to the language.
Mr. Chair,
Representative.
Well, again, what is it now? And we're going to a gross misdemeanor, and how many cases a year, and what's the cost to our courts? Can someone answer that?
Someone here from the Board of Animal Health?
Just that. Sorry. Here we go.
Do you hear the question?
Chris Petrini, Minnesota Board of Animal Health. And no, could you repeat the question?
Mr. Chair, and to the witness, on pages 16 and 17, particularly the top of 17, you say a violation of this section, the section we're talking about here, is a gross misdemeanor. Question is, what is it now if you violate that section? and how many cases a year would you have in the court system if we move to a gross misdemeanor, which again includes jail time, and we're building prisons, but not even at a rate to take care of our murderers and other folks. And you're adding gross misdemeanor penalties here. So what's the current penalty?
If you could take, let me just take one second here and identify what section this is.
Is it your section or is it Department of Ag?
This is section 31. This is not our chapter.
Okay, 31A.
So I may not be the best person to answer right. This. 31 is...
31A.10.
Sam, could you look that up?
Who from the department handles that?
That's an Ag department.
That's A.
Yeah. Mr. Rankin, can you help?
Mr. Chairman? Maybe one thing that I could comment just briefly looking at this, that perhaps one reason why this was made, suggested to be made a gross misdemeanor, because of the concern of moving animal products that can cause disease, particularly food products that have the potential to spread things like foot and mouth disease. And I would just offer that that might be one suggestion.
So, Wagenius.
Yes. Sometimes criminal penalties aren't very effective just because it's so hard to get into the courts. Do you have administrative penalty order authority which can be more effective?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Do you have authority or would there be authority for administrative penalty orders here? In other words, somebody has to reimburse for the harm they caused. Sometimes that's tougher standard than the threat of a little jail time, which probably won't happen.
The Minnesota Board of Animal Health does not. Maybe I should relinquish the chair for somebody from agriculture to answer.
Mr. Rankin may be able to help.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, the section 31A.26 is the violations and penalties section that is appropriate for this chapter, and this chapter, of course, is meat and poultry inspection. And the basic violation, the criminal violation, is a misdemeanor for most of the chapter. This would increase it to being a gross misdemeanor for this specific section that we're talking about here, 31A.10. Also, there are administrative penalties and civil remedies for minor violations.
Okay. Can you identify yourself for the record and explain why this needs to go to a gross misdemeanor?
Mr. Chair, committee members, Amy Sobieski, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I apologize. Our dairy and food staff is not here today, and I would feel more comfortable if we just maybe remove this rather than have further questions and take more time.
I'll incorporate that in my motion that we delete line 2 on page 17.
Representative Magnus, why don't we just remove that entire section?
Let's do that.
Yep. I don't think there's anything else in that section.
Section 51, I'll move that we delete section 51 or incorporate that in my motion.
Okay, Representative Magnus incorporates the removal or deletion of section 51. It's page 16, starting in line 14 through page 17, the end of line 2.
End of line 2. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next section is section 52 on page 17, Representative Blaine's bill, setting up the Board of Animal Health Laboratory.
Okay.
That continues to page 18, line 26, which I believe is Representative Cornish's bill, House File 307, dealing with servidity.
Before we go off the off that section with regard to the veterinary diagnostic laboratory, is someone here that can speak to the powers of the University of Minnesota versus the powers of the state of Minnesota and how this change impacts that?
Thank you.
Again, Chris Petrini, Minnesota Board of Animal Health. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not from the University of Minnesota, so I can't address that. But the reason that we feel that this is very important to the board and to the health of the domestic animals in the state of Minnesota is in the event of a widespread animal disease emergency, although we call right now the diagnostic lab our official laboratory, we have no way to really change the focus of their work. So if the University of Minnesota says that in the event of a major disease outbreak, if all their resources needed to go towards testing something other than foot and mouth disease, we would have no ability to say we really need to direct your resources to helping us with this disease outbreak. So that was really the focus of having the laboratory actually called our official laboratory and having that made a formal thing in statute so that we would be able to have the university help us, the diagnostic laboratory help us in the event of a disease emergency.
I understand all that need. My concern is that I do not, and we can check this out, we'll put it in the bill for now, but I believe it needs to be clarified as to how the University of Minnesota Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory and its relationship with the state of Minnesota, how that will get clarified, because they're a land-grant institution. I don't believe the state of Minnesota has the power to tell them anything, and so it's very limited. We have power when we have to hold their purse strings. That's about the only power we have. And the I think what your concern is a very legitimate one, and it also indicates in here that the governor, in emergency cases, is to take over this lab. Again, I think we need to make certain that it's not just some language on paper, but in fact it will work, and that we have the authority to do that. I assume that they're in agreement, we don't have a problem, or they can give us some type of documentation, but I would like to get that clarified as this goes through the process.
Clearly, yes.
Okay.
Very good.
Representative Magnus, continue.
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, Representative Berto.
This will be, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if this is the timing. I apologize. When you struck on page 13, line 31, starting there, I was actually off getting the folder that I have on this that relates to my Bill 1857. And this is a very big food safety issue for the department. And just an anecdotal story of why it's needed. A food seller had a fire. Then an embargo was placed so they could not sell any more of that food. And, it had, until it was tested to see if the fire had in some way tainted the food. And, in the dark of night, they sold the food. And the department really, there was not much that they could do about it. And this, increases, administrative fines, and enables, the department to be able to act in that area.
I think we can deal with that issue. The committee felt uncomfortable at this point, and especially with lack of anyone from the department to be able to speak to it, for us to move on it today. But we'll be able to pick that up at another point, and we'll get some of that clarified, I think, and you can get us into some comfort zone. Also, I haven't heard from civil law as to make sure that this has gone through civil law, and want to make sure that that's happened. Just some certain steps we need to make sure.
All right.
Yeah. Appreciate the information, because that really does indicate the urgency or seriousness of this provision.
And I think, Mr. Chairman, that same language that we talked about on page 16 into 17 that we deleted, section 51, is the same thing. It relates to that bill. So we'll wait for Representative Berto to get back to us on that.
Okay.
Thank you. Page 18, section 55, is Representative Cornish's bill, House File 307, talking about Cervidae.
And what is this?
Representative Cornish, would you...
Mr. Chair, members, this is a farm survey bill that's now sitting on the House floor in the General Register. It's been through all the committees, and I think it passed probably unanimously through the Environment Policy Committee already. and it's to do with regulations of Board of Animal Health and the regulation of cervidae, which would include elk and deer and other species kept at farm cervidae farms. If you've got any technical questions, I can answer, but we already went through it.
Same as what's on the House floor?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Angus.
Okay. Thank you. The next section is Section 57, starting on page 22. It's Representative Gunther's Bill 1389. Deals with the County Agricultural Society, exempting them. It's basically county fairs in rural Minnesota, exempting them from local zoning ordinances. Basically, what that section does, Mr. Chair and members, is just clarify what's already in the statutes. There's some disagreement about interpretation of the statute, so it does clarify that.
Okay.
Next section is on page 24, section 68, starting on line 22, Representative Otremba's bill, House File 466, I believe another agency initiative to clarify warehouse storage and operation of grain storage. Again, was heard in the committee. That's a fairly long section, members and Mr. Chairman, and it goes on until page 30. In the top of page 30, section 81, that's Representative Severson's bill, House File 527, dealing with farm labor, housing and manufactured homes, and also Representative Olson's language dealing with in House File 1518, dealing with manufactured homes on a relating to seasonal agricultural operations. That section is in the bottom of page 30 on line 33, seasonal agricultural operations. Allows up to four manufactured homes. The next section is section 87, starts in the bottom of page 31. Representative Erdahl's cheeseburger bill, again. I don't see any penalties in this section.
Mr. Chair?
President Jackie?
Just to my comment I got to make publicly to Erdahl is, you know, this bill was pretty benign until you put that in. Now we're going to have attorneys arguing on this for 2 hours on the House floor. So thanks for that, Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. My response is that most people support this bill, except if you are a member of the Minnesota Trial Lawyers Association.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Erdahl, would you explain the progress of your bill, where it's at now?
I'm expecting to be serving the cheeseburgers on the floor shortly.
That's a promise. We'll move it on.
Okay, you guys.
Get down to work.
This is an extraordinarily broad piece of language, and I'm going to have to disagree with Representative Junkie on this one. This is not a two-hour debate, more like four. Because when you look at something like, this is beyond individual responsibility. Because you look at something on line 12, or a health condition associated with weight gain or obesity, resulting from a long-term purchase, that is extraordinarily broad. And yet when you get to the actions does not apply, you have a material violation of an adulteration. So if you have a small adulteration and somebody gets sick or gets a health condition, well, too bad for them. I mean, the exception, the actions, your exemptions are so broad that I think that's where we're going to have our floor fight, so to speak. I would hope you would look at those exemptions again before we get to the floor. Material violation is a huge loophole.
Mr. Chairman?
President Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius, for bringing those points out. This bill has gone through civil law in the House and passed judiciary in the Senate. It's going to the floor in both. You know, these concerns, I think, were brought up there. Actually, we have tried not to be broad, and if you know, I need to, if you can explain some things to me later on so that we can, you know, minimize the floor struggle a little bit, I'd be glad to listen to that. But our intent is that this be basically prohibiting obesity-related lawsuits. In other words, you eat too many cheeseburgers, you get fat, and you go sue McDonald's because you ate their cheeseburgers. That's what we are trying to prohibit with this, and to leave it open for lawsuits regarding misdeeds on the part of McDonald's or any other food server, being, you know, serving tainted food or adulterated food in any way. So that's our intent, and you know, if you can offer me some advice on how to tighten that up, if you think it needs to be, I'd be glad to speak with you. Let's do it later.
Chair. Just one last comment to Representative Erdl. On the front page of the St. Paul paper today, there was an article reporting that being overweight may actually extend your life. So I don't know if we're even going to need this by the time we're done. I'd suggest you read that article today, and I'm feeling a lot better about myself this morning.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out Chairman, Representative Davids is chair of the committee, and he's out for a long night, too. Mr. Chairman, the next section is the final section really to deal with the bill outside of the revisor's instruction. In section 90, starting in the bottom of page 32, it's the biodiesel. It's my bill dealing with a biodiesel study. It's having the commissioner of the Department of Commerce study the use of biodiesel in home residential use, commercial, and industrial use. And Mr. Chairman, members, I would point out an article I passed out recently to the committee showing that the United States Department of Agriculture is looking at new ways of processing soybeans that reduce significantly the cost of biodiesel. So I think that we do have a great future in encouraging the use of renewable fuels, not only in our vehicles, but also in home, residential, and commercial use. Mr. Chairman and members, this is the ag policy bill. I want to thank our committee members here, especially Representative Junkie working on the other side, and you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Erdahl and Cornish and Pennis also on the committee. Thank them for their work and their support this year.
Representative Magnus, are there any of the repealers that are of concern or...
Not to my knowledge.
Quite a list here. We don't have a description of all the repealers in this. Mr. Rankin, do you know of any repealers that would be of... I understand we put in legislation very often. We have to take out the old, but there may sometimes be some deletions that would be noteworthy. And could you bring those to our attention?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I believe there is... each of these repealers, the A, B, C, and D, and so forth, were a part of each of the individual bills that came in. The one that you may be interested in is, at least one of them, on page 33, starting on line 26, the repealer labeled as paragraph G. This was the farmer lender mediation that was being extended a year or two at a time repeatedly, and so the entire package here of how it used to be extended is being repealed. That's why it looks so long.
So the end result is that becomes a permanent program?
Not necessarily. It is put into statute, though, instead of
state laws?
Being left in session law.
Okay. Where does that... We didn't have language in here that accomplished that, so I'm wondering how...
Mr. Chairman?
At least I didn't see it.
Let me look for that. I believe we did, either in your amendment or...
That's in the section of Representative Tremba, I believe, had the bill in front of us, but I don't know if it's in this bill. Or is it Pennis? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Representative Pennis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure what question you're asking, but the Farmlander Mediation Bill extended the date to, I believe it was 2011, and it has passed the floor already. I think it, yeah, I didn't see it in here, or did I?
No, if it's passed the floor, okay. It wouldn't be in. It
Mr. Rankin? I just want some.
Mr. Chair, it's a very, very short section. And would be easy to overlook.
Great. While you're looking for that, I think what we'll do is see if we have any other questions. I just want to verify that it is there, because it would be, I wouldn't want to, you know, just accidentally in changing repealers and getting rid of some languages and state laws, essentially delete the program. I don't want to do that. So, and I'm sure you're not, but I just, or we're not doing that, but I want to make certain. Representative Magnus, any other comments?
That's it, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions from members on the A7 amendment as modified by Representative Magnus? Does anyone in the audience want to speak in opposition to any of the provisions in A7 amendment? Okay. The A7 amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Who has another amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Virdal.
I've got a couple that should be fairly short here. Thank you. The first one, page 4, line 26, just add after H, and I, from page 22, just in conversation with Mr. Rankin. That's just an oral, I'm sorry, it's just an oral amendment.
Is this to the bill or the amendment?
No, it's to the bill.
Just to the page
4, line 26, to add after H and I. I is on page 22, and this is in the advice of Mr. Rankin, who thought that that should be included there in the description.
After the H on line 26, and I. Before the period.
Yeah.
Okay, any questions on that amendment? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chairman, if we could look at the 13 amendment.
Handwritten amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Rankin.
Burdall moves the third amendment with the handwritten, number 13 on it. Representative Burdall.
Basically, what this does is it takes $5,000 from groundwater and $5,000 from the turf research and gives $10,000 for 06 to the Minnesota Horticulture Society.
Okay. Any questions on that amendment? Representative Rudall, is this a one-time only, or is this ongoing?
It says the first year.
This is the first year.
Just from being advised, I believe it's one time.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions on the Representative Rudall's amendment? Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have people here that can speak up in defense of where this money is being taken from the turf project? And I don't remember what the first one.
On turf project.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Then, as I understand it, would read on page 5, line 21, $70,000 the first year and $75,000 the second year. To, because this is a 1 year. for a turf seed, and I would agree to that.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, and the other is $5,000 from groundwater, which is for my bill, and I would agree to that. And thanking Representative Pennis for generously allowing the $5,000, and considering, of course, that flowers grow on turf.
Representative Hoppe, does that help you?
It helps, Mr. Chair. And just to refresh my memory, when did the Minnesota Horticultural Society last have funding from the legislature?
Representative Riddle?
I believe it was the 2003 budget where they were zeroed out. Before that, they'd received about $75,000 a year.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, the Erdahl Amendment identified as 13 is in front of us. Hope the number is not significant. Could put 14 up there.
It was Maryland.
That amendment is before us. Anyone in the audience want to speak in opposition to that amendment? Okay, members, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Members, I've been given with regard to information on the mediation services. That would be in the Magnus Amendment. It's on page 31, lines 24 through 28 is where we find that is established in statute. Just for that clarification, it is included. Okay. We have another amendment. Mr. Rudolph, did you say you had another one?
I may as well do the next one, too.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And which amendment is that?
A2.
A2 amendment, okay. Representative Rudolph, moves the A2 amendment. Representative Rudolph.
Members, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding agriculture, I think that this is one of the most important votes that you'll take this year regarding the future of agriculture in Minnesota. We're attempting to capture the ethanol tails beyond 2012 to build a pool of value-added and other ag-related enterprise in the future. Now, if you have this bill before you, we've heard testimony. I'm not going to belabor you with a lot of details today. It is, in my opinion, that the language in the bill as presented does not ensure that there will be money to fund a pool for agriculture beyond 2012. And without instructive language, the money is left in limbo for reassignment. There is no fiscal note for this biennium. Finance is already budgeted and planned to fund at the $15.3 million level. Now, let me appeal to you to those of you that have rural roots, we're running out of time, politically and geographically. If anyone thinks that it'll be easy to tap into this money in 2012, you probably think that a lagoon is for swimming. We are an agriculture committee. It should not be our assignment to, in effect, cut our budget by 40%. Can you imagine the other department losing that amount of its budget? I ask you to stand up for agriculture today and give the farmers that some of you represent some hope. If in 2012 or 2012 another legislature has need for this money, let them further reduce the budget of agriculture. If another committee feels the need to cut the budget for agriculture, let them do it in their committee. And let us today stand for funding agriculture in the future.
Hey, Representative Riddle, I'd like to give you some assurance. We're not trying to cut the dollars from agriculture. And so what I'd like to do is to have Mr. Reinholtz kind of walk us through a little 101 on how the fiscal activities really kind of fold together, and how these dollars are in the base as other dollars are in the base of other departments as they're established. And we certainly don't take it away from that base. And what you're trying to do is actually a future appropriation of those dollars, which is quite different from taking it away. Not appropriating it doesn't mean we're taking it away, and that's the point I'd like to make. And Representative, Mr. Reinholtz, would you give us some background and a little detailed information as to how all this works.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the current ethanol appropriation is a direct appropriation in the Delete All Amendment. In fiscal year 2007, it is listed at $15,268,000. The budget rules as established in statute would say then that the base appropriation for 2008 is established based upon the appropriation from 2007 for any direct appropriation. So in ethanol's case, when the budget, when the forecasts come out 2 years from now for the 08-09 budget, the ethanol and rural economic infrastructure appropriation base will be listed at $15,268,000, assuming no changes, this bill is adopted and no changes happen in years, in sessions between now and then. So that's why this language has no, well, makes no change in the dollars that will be available for ethanol and rural economic infrastructure development going forward in 08, 09, and on until the legislature makes a change. The base comes forward, and if the legislature, this committee, adopts it, it will go forward at that amount. What the amendment does, though, as Chairman Osmond indicated, turns it into a statutory appropriation. The dollar amounts would be listed carry on fund balances as the same total, but it now has turned into an appropriation in the future rather than a base amount. Most of the guidelines that the Joint Commission on Fiscal Policy have adopted would recommend not to make statutory appropriations on this type of an item. It would recommend that they, you know, be kept as a direct appropriation. The dollar amount is going to be the same that's available. So if there's any questions on how that works, I'd be happy to answer.
Okay, good. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When this was established, the 2000, mental block on when the ethanol payments were first established, but that was a direct appropriation scheduled for 10 years, am I correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erdahl, the ethanol appropriation was an open appropriation previously. It was changed to a direct appropriation, I believe, once one biennium ago. The difference was that the open appropriation would have went away as the ethanol payments ended. By changing it to a direct appropriation, it did capture the tails by the establishment of a base. So no, it was an open appropriation previously. It was changed to a direct either 2 or 4 years ago, I believe, too.
Representative Erdahl, I think what we're trying to tell you is that, or explain, is that the dollars are going to be there in the future in the base. What your proposal, though, does is actually determine as to what those dollars would be spent for, rather than the language on page 19, on starting on line 3, where we have the rural economic infrastructure outlined, and I think we may even have some amendments to some of this language to even give more clarification. But and on page 22, there's language also about the economic infrastructure. And the by changing this to the method that you're asking for, I believe then we have to change it to, we have to carry it forward as part of the tails, and then it becomes part of a, if we have of state obligations with regard to measuring our deficits and or amount of dollars that are available. Mr. Reinholz, can you explain how that works?
Mr. Chairman, it does get carried forward a little slightly different than a statutory appropriation in the fund statements. The dollar amount would be the same whether it was a direct or a statutory going forward. Is it any more guaranteed to be there in the future? Realistically, no, because the legislature can come back at any point and change or reduce or eliminate this appropriation that's statutory also. The main argument to not create statutory appropriations that is usually forwarded is that, and it's not true, people say it takes it off the books a little bit and moves it away, and therefore it has less scrutiny, as direct appropriations usually are scrutinized more. The current base creates a future obligation listed on the books. This carries forward and creates an obligation also. Some people think it's a higher obligation or more strong. I don't believe it is, because I've seen committees change statutory appropriations also. So I think it's more of a matter of technically how we structure the budgets, and this type of an item is typically not made a statutory appropriation.
I think my final comment, I appreciate inclusion of the base funding in this. Thankful for the concern shown. I am not as confident as some other members that 7 years from now this money will be available unless we do it statutorily, and that or set it as an appropriation. And also, let the legislature, in my response would be, let the legislature in 2012 then change it if they wish. But I think it sends a higher message to the people who are involved in agriculture and concerned with agriculture in Minnesota to do it as an appropriation.
The concern I have is that of establishing a statutory appropriation. It's not where the dollars are going, because we intend for those dollars to be there for agriculture. We haven't taken it away. We haven't done anything to hurt the base with regard to agriculture. And that those base dollars are there. With the Department of Natural Resources, they came forward this year with a whole fistful of requests for statutory appropriations. And you don't see any of those in the bill, because I just think it's bad policy to take the legislative process out of the deliberation on how we are going to spend our dollars. And that needs to be before each legislature as they come forward. Departments shouldn't be doing it. And when our issues are going to change in the future with regard to where dollars may be going, I think the legislature that's here at that time should be addressing those issues and seeing what they're really planning to do. So it's not the dollar amount nor where the dollars are going. It's the policy of utilizing or establishing a statutory appropriation that I'm having difficulty with, and how that implicates or adds into our the tails that we have to be accounted for. We already have them there with regard to the base, and it just is easier to deal with. So, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I hear what you're saying, and I understand the dollar amount. The problem, the dilemma we have right now is that base is eroding. And are you indicating or inkling that if we could come up with statutory language to solidify that base as opposed to a dollar amount figure, you may be more open to looking at it? Because I think we can. I mean, the problem is the statutory language right now on the ethanol money is a decreasing base every year, the way it's set up, eventually down to zero. And we've gone, again, from $69 million a year, a biennium, 2 years, three, 4 years ago, to $44 million last year, to $34 million this year. It's rapidly eroding. And, again, we do need, and I think it's very appropriate, and I don't think it's just a rural issue, this state needs to work on issues like hydrogen and wind and biomass and any other alternative fuel you can think of in the future is this state's history or future. It's our history and our future. But with this eroding base of dollars, I think it does become more difficult every year to come back and appropriate into that.
And I'd certainly be willing, Mr. Chair, to work with you and Representative Erdahl to find some statutory language change that wouldn't actually plug in a $15,268,000. I understand your concern with that, but it's our eroding base that's the problem right now.
In the governor's bill, I understand we could have that impression, but I believe we have made some corrections to that. And Mr. Reinholz, can you explain as to how that people may be able to see that we have not eroding this piece, it stays.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Junkie, Chairman Osmond described it correctly. His delete all amendment stops the erosion of that base and establishes it at $15,268,000. Going forward into 08 and 09.
Can you show us where that is in the bill so we can be looking
at it? Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, if you turn to page 4, the rider on line 7 through 27, this rider does several things. One, it directly appropriates the 18,745 and 15,268 to be used for ethanol payments in those respective years. It also goes on starting on line 14 to say that if it distributes the money on quarter, if there is excess money, to make it on a pro rata basis. Beginning on line 18, it talks about if the appropriation exceeds the total amount for all producers eligible in a fiscal year for scheduled payments, the balance would be used to reimburse ethanol producers for deficiencies as provided in Minnesota statute. So this is establishing that we don't just pay out for the ethanol payments at 13 cents. Any extra money that's there will be spent by the department for those deficiency payments. And then the statutory language that's adopted from Representative Erdahl's bill later in the language also makes that appropriation available for the rural infrastructure uses. So if there was any, that is statutory language that will go forward. So the effect of what came out of the governor's proposal was a couple lines that established the base in 08 and 09 at 13 cents. That was in this bill 2 years ago. It was proposed in this bill by the governor this year. It is not in the delete all amendment. So the base amount will be established as all base direct base amounts will be in 08 and 09 is carried on our spreadsheet and will be carried, if passed that way, will be carried by the Department of Finance for 08 and 09 at $15,268,000 going forward. And assuming the legislature made no other changes, that would continue indefinitely at that level.
Representative Chunky.
Tell me again in that paragraph you just read where we're addressing Representative Erdahl's rural economic infrastructure language. I'm just unclear. I see it all ethanol payments, but where's the reference to the rural economic infrastructure after the ethanol is done?
That'd be an H and I.
Mister,
is that the HI stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I believe back in the bill, then you would find those on 22 finds where that adds that use as being eligible use for those dollars.
Mr. Chair, then that, I don't know, I guess Representative Erdahl doesn't need this, and if that's the case, I just want to be very clear as to the intent here, Mr. Chair, of your delete all amendment then is to establish a base of roughly $34 million a biennium from here forward, and if it's not used to make the ethanol program whole, which is the first place it should be used, then it's captured for the Erdahl rural economic infrastructure, which is hydrogen or wind or other things that we can do. Is that your intent?
Representative Junkie, that is my
intent. Mr. Reinholz.
Chairman, just one slight clarification. It doesn't establish it at 34. It established, the base is established using the second year of the biennium going forward to the next. So it's established at $15,268,000 in each of 08 and 09, the proposed amendment would establish.
So roughly $30 million.
Mr. Chairman.
A biennium going forward.
Representative Junkie, what, and Representative Erdahl, and I just stuck this little complicated, especially for me, because I'm not a numbers person to begin with. But the intent has been, with the assistance of staff, and trying to get this established so that it becomes part of the base. Because my concern is, when you have language like you have here, that there will be reason for others to pull that language out, and then it looks like you're actually getting the people are voting to erode the support for agriculture. And if we can get it established as the base, that's the best way I know to establish long-term funding availability.
And Mr.
Chair,
make
it part of the base.
I agree with you, and I, at this point, after seeing that and hearing your explanation and the fiscal analyst's explanation, I would recommend Representative Erdahl pull his amendment, because I think it does do exactly that. I do believe it does that. And you're right. In the future, then, all we're monkeying with is language issues. What is rural economic infrastructure? And we can adjust depending on the year and the need. But the base is established at 30 now forever.
That's the intent.
Mr.
If
Chairman,
it doesn't do that, we'll keep working.
And I appreciate the intent, and that's exactly what we should be doing, Mr. Chair, at this point in time.
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, I appreciate that. I appreciate the suggestions, and I think it was important for me to bring this forward to get it clarified today. Mm-hmm. There are no objections, and the fact that I have a 10:15 hearing in taxes today, I'll withdraw it.
Representative Erdahl withdraws the A2 amendment, and I appreciate that. I appreciate having the opportunity for us to talk about this, where it's on the record and people know exactly what's happening, because it's it gets very complex and difficult to explain sometimes. Are there other amendments?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. How long do you intend to be going today?
We have this room till 12 o'clock, so. We intend to keep going until we're finished.
I'm going to pass this. I'll be back.
If we run into any, if you let us know where you're at, so in case we run into, and that goes for other members too, if we run into something that's controversial, we'll ask for you to come back before we take any votes. We want you to be here. I have an A11 amendment. The A11 amendment is on the same subject, and only it actually makes some changes on page 19 to the rural economic infrastructure definition. And it says on line 8, after efficient, we insert infrastructure, and on line 12, after or, we insert the support of. So the we would have, let's see. And on 12. It's been suggested that these clarifications would be helpful, and so I need members to take a look at this. I haven't had a chance to talk to you about it individually before. But it would then read that the, and I'll read the whole paragraph, is that there's not really a separating sentence there because of where the two words are located. Rural economic infrastructure means the development or activities that will enhance the value of agricultural crop or livestock, commodities, or byproducts or waste from farming operations through new and improved value-added conversion processes and technologies. The development of more timely and efficient infrastructure delivery systems and the enhancement of marketing opportunities. Rural economic infrastructure also means land, building, structures, fixtures, and improvements located or to be located in Minnesota and used or operated primarily for the processing or the support of production of marketable products from agricultural commodities produced in Minnesota. And these are words that feel it would make a little more clarification and maybe even a little more availability so that we are actually not missing out on rural economic infrastructure opportunities. Is there any comment with regard to those changes? Hey, anyone want to speak in opposition to the A11 amendment? Okay, and I thank Mr. Schoenfeld for the advice.
Well,
Representative Wagenius.
I trust you're taking care here to mean that rural economic infrastructure does not mean rural roads. That is really part of another area. But when I see land, that isn't something that pops to mind. Historically, when we've talked about rural infrastructure, farm market roads is what just pops to my mind. And so I'm trusting that you do not want to use this money for any of that. That's a separate, that should be provided in a separate committee.
And what is that again? I'm sorry, I didn't.
Transportation. Rural roads. You want rural roads to be provided for in a separate committee, and that this not be so broadly read as to provide for rural roads, mm-hmm. for outstate roads.
That's not the initial intent. That's for, I can see where that can be read into it.
Improvements, land. Read. That's what I read. Or I could read that if mm-hmm. I chose to.
Are there other questions on the amendment? Looking for the number. Today, 11? The motion reoccurs on the A11 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Are there any other amendments? Okay, I have an A12, Representative Peterson.
It's up to you. It's up to you on your schedule. I have an A8.
A8. Representative Peterson moves the A8 amendment. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I propose to restore funding to the Sustainable Ag Grant Program at the Department. Historically, they used to be around $210,000 a year. I think it was typical for them to use all of the funding that they receive. How do I pay for it? By taking $120,000 a year from the Ag Fund. That's the fees that we heard about from the Department in the beginning of session. So it's pretty straightforward. I think we should make a priority in the state for the funding that this group has gotten at MDA in order to help those farmers that are engaged in activities other than soybeans, corn, or beets, if you will. And on top of that, the presentation that we heard from Mr. Hunt a couple weeks ago from NRCS and his relationship with Mr. Munson at the FSA proved out to us that it's very important that we leverage money from the federal government to improve environmental quality, primarily from the Environmental Quality Incentives Program that Mr. Hunt made clear that he was very proud to have running at a high level in Minnesota. I think these types of agricultural activities do help leverage more rural development in terms of sustainable agriculture from such programs as EQIP that would, in fact, help the goals of the Clean Water Legacy. This is not a lot of money. It gets them back to where they used to be. And since we've come into the room today, nobody from the department has answered Representative Junkie's question on page 3, if I might extend this a little bit, as to the commissioner's ability to reduce the appropriations for the administration of activities in this subdivision by up to $135,000 a year and transfer the amounts reduced to activities under subdivision 5, which is administration and financial assistance for other type things. Now, I propose to take it from the Ag Fund because of the fees that are going into and increasing into the department. I didn't bother with messing with turf grass or for other types of things. I think we should consider this. and any input I'd appreciate from either the department or members of the committee.
Mr. Chairman,
department, go ahead and get up. Come up to
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, is there any driving agency or organization behind this amendment? And is it just for a sustainable agriculture? And is there any agency or organization behind the movement?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Cornish, I did have a hearing on this in one of the possible inclusion hearings. And at that point, the Land Stewardship Project did testify. And we got background information from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It's in the bill for $80,000. I'm proposing to, as a member of the House and this committee, make it more of a fully funded provision. So I guess to your question, it's also a priority of mine as a member of the House.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Before we hear from the Ag Department, I was at a meeting, and I believe the testifier was too, in Mankato, and a statement came up for more money for sustainable agriculture, and there was a number of farmers there that were against that. And also, I guess, take this time to say I'm just a little upset with land stewardship and their political direction and the movement they're going on. It seemed like it's almost a us versus them attitude that they have lately with feedlot sightings, things to do with agriculture. And that they're behind this really doesn't give me any comfortability after this session of dealing with them and the things that have, how they've worked against agriculture instead of for it. And so I guess I'd rather have the focus stay on traditional agriculture instead of this, and I'm going to oppose the amendment at this time.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Corbom, do you want to identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. For the record, Jim Borbom, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Just a couple of comments on the background of this. I can appreciate Representative Peterson's interest in furthering the sustainable ag activity. The amendment, however, creates some challenges for us. We essentially have about 25 accounts within the agency that are part of the 208 account. We collect monies for, again, dairy services, food handler inspection, ag law inspection, commercial cannery inspection. There's, again, a series of accounts that the agency has for many select purposes. The difficulty we have with this amendment is that there's no authority in any of those funds to use money other than what they're for those inspection or regulatory purposes. So that one of the difficulties. In addition to the grants that the agency does administer, we do offer some low-interest loan programs that are available to producers of organic and sustainable ag purposes. So, Mr. Chairman, members, our position would be not to support the amendment.
Okay. Commissioner Borbom, the agricultural fund, that's a fund that's developed through different fees on different activities. And am I correct in from your testimony that each one of those fees is for a specific purpose? Is that?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. There's about 25 counts I have on a summary sheet here. In each of those counts, there's statutory authorization to collect either inspection fees or license fees. Most of them are inspection fees. And a couple of examples, again, would be food handler inspection, ag law inspection, commercial cannery inspection, beverage inspection. So those are the natures of the accounts in the ag fund.
Representative Wiggins.
Let me support this from a different angle, and that is as a consumer. I am fairly typical of an urban consumer in Minnesota, and as part of that I belong to a CSA. I paid my money. Unfortunately, that CSA is in Wisconsin, and I can't belong to a CSA in Minnesota because there's not one available for me. I would prefer to be putting my money back into Minnesota. So there, I think there are more opportunities for making money here that we're not taking advantage of. And I'll give you a second example. When I don't get my food from the CSA, I get it from a co-op in the cities. And they sell a lot of organic produce. Huge amounts. Huge amounts. It's the biggest co-op in the United States. And very little of the food comes from Minnesota. It comes from Mexico, Peru, California, Arizona. And I get my wheat from Freeport, but very little of the food is from Minnesota. And that's too bad. I wish we had, and just saying, you know, because it always has the place of origin. You rarely see Minnesota, even in the summertime, when there is, you know, we could be providing the summer crops. There's so many opportunities for farmers here that we're not helping out and getting kind of on track. So because I see this opportunity for a great deal of income for Minnesota, I wish we would support Representative Peterson's amendment. I just don't want to have, I'd much rather have a CSA in Minnesota.
Other questions from members?
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I realize that it might be administratively difficult at the department, but you know, I have also realized that's part of the downfall of being a legislator, that we're not necessarily implementers, and maybe I didn't pick the right source, and maybe this amendment will not go on, but I want it to be on the record that you know, I don't think Representative Cornish's comments are correct. I think he's reaching into other parts of agricultural debate. This is a program at the Department of Agriculture that several groups use. There's a whole green book that's published out of what comes out of this. It's not a sideshow. And until this state gets on the ball and doesn't keep treating groups that aren't at the USDA trough with the commodity title and the countercyclical payments and the LDPs and the this and the that and all that comes out of D.C., I think that we're missing an opportunity. And one thing you know if you live in rural Minnesota, especially the western side of the state, that there's room. There's room for a lot of things. This is one thing that there's room for. I hope the budget in out years improves so we don't have deficit type decisions to make. And with that, you can vote however you want.
President Peterson, I understand. I don't know exactly how people would vote if it was with regard to just where the dollars are going, but I would encourage members to oppose this from the fact that we have an agricultural fund that is used for dedicated purposes. These are user fees that are paid into a fund that are to go to some specific activities, and to then tell people that we're going to divert their user fees to some other purpose is something we've been trying to fight against, not encourage. Unfortunately, that happens a little too often just within the bureaucracies, and we're trying to get that corrected. So I would encourage opposition to the A8th Amendment. Other, Representative Wagenius.
As you are thinking of opposition, Mr. Chair, are there other places where you can, I hear your argument about the dollar amount, about where the dollars are coming from, but with the notion in mind that we want to encourage profit in Minnesota, and I have to feel that at this table there is not one person who doesn't want to encourage some very high-value agriculture in Minnesota, and that is organic agriculture. It is extremely high-value. And trying to get those dollars to circulate in Minnesota and not be sent to California, Arizona, Peru, or Wisconsin, how would you suggest we approach this amendment to be encouraging that high-value agriculture?
Representative Wagenius, there's opposition evidently to the other portion of the amendment also, with just the program itself. Representative Cornish, I think, had addressed that issue.
But if there's a way to, I haven't looked at this specific issue to find out where the flexibility may be in to provide for organic that's a little different than just sustainable.
I understand that.
And so I don't really know where we may be able to find, you know, some redirection there that could avoid some of the frustrations that some people may have with the first portion of the amendment where we could get some common ground. Representative Wagenius.
And my frustration, of course, is on the consumer side and seeing all these dollars going out of the state. And I don't know how to deal with that because I don't sit on the Agriculture Policy Committee. But I truly wish members could come and see the co-op where I buy and a huge number of folks in the metro area buy their food and the disappointment that people have that they can't buy Minnesota food. When I say I can buy popcorn from Minnesota, it's organic. I can buy wheat and all the wheat products and that comes from the mill in Freeport. But most of the stuff I can't buy from Minnesota. And that's a shame.
Any other questions, Representative Cornish?
I'm having a hard time identifying with your eating habits because I cross the river and get sweet corn out of my dad's field and I harvest critters from the woods like bear and deer and rabbit to eat. So, and my daughter lives in this.
Sorry,
my daughter lives in the cities, and she can't stand the food. I truck her up animals from the woods. So.
But there's free range
animals. Are there any other questions on the A8th Amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I just have to respond. The co-op sells free range chickens and all sorts of things that I think you probably just enjoy immensely. But I still would ask you, Mr. Chairman, if there is a way that we can figure out how to not let another year go by, but to encourage this high value to Minnesota growers and not... How do we do it? I mean, if this plan doesn't work, there have got to be other plans that do. This is a creative committee. How do we make something work?
Representative Peterson, your focus is on sustainable agriculture. Is that the same in your mind as organic, or are they two separate issues?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Not necessarily the same. You know, there's different standards.
And sustainable and not
yeah.
be organic.
I mean, it's just like me. I guess
organic and not have it be sustainable. Right. So.
Yeah, I guess I refer to it as those that aren't necessarily on the commodity title at USDA.
Okay. All right. Is there anyone in the audience, Representative Pennis?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would hope that this task force that we've renewed that's in the bill, which I carried for renewing the organic sustainable task force, that they maybe would come up with some recommendations. because Representative Wagenius, I came up with the idea once, we need labeling that says Minnesota grown, and I think that's
organic. No.
Well, and yes, organic and Minnesota grown. So probably we can look to them also to come up with some ideas in the future.
Do you have anything further, Commissioner?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, the only thing that I was just advised that the organic task force, or the language in the grant program does allow funds to go toward organic purposes, organic growers, and our comment is well taken, and we'll certainly pursue that.
If anyone in the audience wants to speak for or against the A8 Amendment. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, I'm Bill Bond, Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. Very simply stated, we appreciate the needs that are determined by the intent of the amendment. The Department of Ag has numerous funds that are all dedicated funds collected from my members and others who pay in based on rates, fertilizer and pesticides, and those funds cover specific programs. And while we think this program ought to find its funding other than through this source.
Good question.
Just Mr. Chairman, just a short comment. Not even to you, but you know, the private pay nursing home people are raising $98 million from them in fees. That's not going back to the nursing home. So this part about fees and not knowing where to take the money from, it's a little disingenuous conversation because you know, we're taxing senior citizens tune of $100 million now. So just for the record.
Representative Peterson, I understand the frustration. We all have that, but there's some things that are under our control, right, and we need to kind of try and do the best we can, and we have direct control on it.
Yeah, so. I think we've spent enough time on it.
Is there anyone else who wants to speak for or against the A8 amendment? Okay, the motion reoccurs on the A8 amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
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 Motion fails. The are there other amendments we had? Let's see. I believe there's one section that we had questioned earlier that was in the bill, and I don't want to forget that. It was, I believe, on page 3. Representative Dunkey had a question. I think it was on page 3, lines 4 through 9. I believe that's what it was.
That's correct.
And does the department have an answer for that? Why that's in the bill? Mr. Reinholz, maybe you have some information.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I did talk to the department, and this language was carried forward from the previous bill, and the department has indicated that they do not need this language and would be fine with them if it was deleted.
Mr. Chair, I'd move to delete that lines 4 through 9 on page 3.
Representative Junkie has a motion to delete lines 4 through 9 on page 3. Any questions? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Okay. We now have the A9 amendment. I will move the A9 amendment. And that's a clarification on page 10, line 3, after government. We're inserting the words, or a Minnesota Conservation Corps employee is what it would say. It would be the full sentence. The I understand that this is a fee that applicators are may pay, but we have give a break to the government employees, and because the Minnesota Conservation Corps is also very involved with this, so we thought we'd extend that same courtesy to them. There's no reason adding costs to them for something that we really appreciate their assistance with. Any questions on the A9 amendment? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. I have an A10 amendment. As I understand, this is an amendment to make some corrections. Who can speak to that? Mr. Rankin?
Mr. Chairman, committee members.
I'll move that amendment.
A very simple little amendment, technical, basically. On page 7, you'll notice up on lines 9 through 11 that we have removed some of the language, which is historic in nature, talks about how the fees were incremented through time. The revisor's office failed to catch the words that we're striking here. So on page line 11, we're dropping the reference to the 1992 change.
Okay.
Technical.
All right. Any questions on the A10 amendment? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. And we have one more amendment, the A5 amendment. Would someone from the department like to speak to this amendment? I will move it. Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, members, Jim Borbom, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Agriculture. This amendment was in our agency bill a year ago, and it was just an agency oversight that we did not get it included earlier. It allows the agency to collect fees for work that we already do. 2 years ago, the Department of Commerce discontinued doing an inspection of scales, and the Department of Minnesota has that authority and has that responsibility under the cooperative agreement with USDA. So this just allows us to collect and to deposit the fees for the work that the agency has been doing for the past 2 years. I appreciate your support.
Okay, any questions? Is there anyone in the audience who wants to speak in opposition to the A5 amendment? Okay, the motion reoccurs that the A5 amendment be adopted. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Take care of it. This one too? Okay. That is. Okay. As far as I know, members, anyone have any additional amendments? I think that takes care of it. We'll have the motion will be that the House File 1420, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and that we will adopt the spreadsheet that we've been working off of, and with any changes that we noted on that spreadsheet. We also direct staff to draft language to reflect the numbers in the spreadsheet and make any corrections in the bill to make things fit, renumber, all that sort of thing. That will all be included in the motion. Any questions on that motion? Representative Johnson.
And just, Mr. Chair, just to the point, that other than money issues, when you go to Ways and Means, I would hope if anyone has questions on, there's a lot of policy in here that you would seek out authors or members to come in and testify if we're not in the room, because some of the stuff I can see people monkeying with, and I don't necessarily want to do that. Any help we can give you, let us know.
And any help you can give would be greatly appreciated. So, are there any other questions? Is there anyone else in the audience wants to speak against House File 1420 as amended? Okay, the motion is before us. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is passed on to Ways and Means. The on Thursday, we also may work beyond our 10 o'clock time frame, so we will start again tomorrow morning at 8:45, like we did this morning. And if members, we have the language from the environmental bill. The environmental bill is, we have the draft language that we're going to pass out to you. It's still a document in progress. Staff and others have tried very diligently to try and put it all together. It's been extremely difficult this year with the way that the administration approached the issue, not only putting out a governor's bill, but then bringing in so many other bills that would then have same provisions in other bills, and it was very difficult as we were laying things over, and then staff is trying to sort it out as to what exactly was the one that's supposed to go into the omnibus bill. And so they've done very good work trying to get that accomplished, but have some patience as you're reading through it. It's not a complete we'll probably have an author's adjustment to the bill for tomorrow morning, just as we find things, some duplications, other things we're trying to make, we'll be making corrections. But I wanted to get this into your hands, and just because with any further delay would just put you at a significant disadvantage. So we wanted to make sure you had what we have. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I just glance at this and see that this is based on option B. Are we going to get a similar option A?
As you go through the get towards the back of the document, you'll see it has a another article, Article 2, and actually that starts on page 148.
And I need to make a correction on that page.
Mr. Chair, which page was
on? 148.
I can't hear with all the noise.
We'll kind of wait for things to quiet down here in a minute. It's a document in progress, so no matter what you have in your hand, it's not going to be the finished product, so don't panic over it. On page 148, on line 6, on line 15, after representatives, need to insert fails to, and then on line 16, delete the ES on passes. So the line would read, if the House of Representatives fails to pass House File 1664. Representative Wagenius, to your answer, that is option A. Representative Wagenius.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is the most unusual situation, and I think you'd have to agree with that. The Racino, on which most of this bill is based, is in Taxes Committee and hasn't come out. And it's debatable. I mean, nobody knows because it hasn't come out. And help me here. Is it your intention that we vote on this bill before we see whether Racino passes or not?
Representative Wagenius, we'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it. I suspect we will need to pass out of this committee our recommendations to fit either one of those scenarios. And so where along the line that the legislature will make a decision as to which scenario is the final factor is still up in the air. Representative Wagenius.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think in fairness to Minnesota citizens and to the people who watch our process that we have to flesh out option A and to have the detailed line item budget that we have for option B, because at this point it's probably 50-50 whether we have whether Racino passes or not. I have no clue, and I don't think anybody here has any clue, and since we have a 50-50 chance, it seems to me that our option A has got to be as complete as our option B. And just to tell DNR to cut $3 million or almost $4 million each year, and for us to have no idea where those cuts would be made, in my judgment, is irresponsible. I have to know, is that coming from trails? Is that coming from minerals? Is that coming from parks? Are we going to close parks? We have to be able to tell our constituency what is going on. I don't think any of us really are in the position to vote on this bill with option A without it being complete. So I hope we take the time to make it as complete and that you bring forth the recommendations just as you did in option B so that we can know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to hear from the departments tomorrow. They've been asked yesterday to provide us information as to what they would be reducing if option A was actually becomes the position of the House, what that would mean. Representative Guinness.
Then will we have that reduced to writing so we can put it then in this bill?
We will know tomorrow as to what format that they are presenting that information to us. It will be up to this committee as to what they want to do with option A. Any Representative Hacker?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like you said, that this is a work in progress. If we should happen to find something that we don't think is right or maybe a mistake or something, should we bring that to your attention then? Or?
Absolutely, okay. Yes. Because I want to try and put together an author's an amendment that would make corrections that are, you know, technical nature. There's duplications, things of that nature that we're finding. But it's really because of the complexity of trying to pull all this together, it's been difficult for staff. So, yes, if you find things that
are inaccurate, bring it to our attention. We will try and discern as to what the accurate format should be, and we'll bring that to the committee's attention first thing in the morning.
Very good. Thank you.
Are there other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then just for my clarification as I look this over, we'll be voting separately for option B and option A, so we could pass one and not pass the other. Is that?
That'll be up to committee decision tomorrow.
Hasn't been decided yet, really.
We haven't decided it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Representative Wiggins.
So, Mr. Chairman, am I understanding from that you expect the final vote on this tomorrow, even though we have not heard from the departments about option A?
Representative Wiggins, it's my understanding that we need to have a recommendation that's moved on to Ways and Means Committee tomorrow. That's our deadline. It goes to taxes from here because of some provisions that's in the bill. It goes to taxes, then goes to Ways and Means. And so, yes, we're supposed to move on this bill tomorrow.
I'm astounded.
Any other questions? Anything else that needs to be brought to anyone's attention? Okay. And if you have any corrections, make sure they're brought to our attention, and your amendments be handled just like we did today. You know, try to get them as quickly as you can so that we can get them into your folders. It's a matter, again, of having the ability to get everything copied and get it available to everyone. And if people want copies of amendments early, just come down to us and we'll get you whatever we have. So, anything else? Tomorrow morning, 8:45, this room. We are adjourned.